Yankees Files Podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you just witnessed what I think has to be the worst loss of the season. The Yankees blew a 7-3 lead in the ninth inning in Miami, and they fall to 60-58, a terrible record for this team. And Whipple, you know, I have a lot of thoughts, some of which went viral on Twitter this week, about how this Yankees team ended up where this Yankees team has ended up. But at the end of the day, there's no sugarcoating it. This team is 5 games out of a playoff spot. They just lost 2 extremely winnable series. They have a number of key players who are injured. They have a number of other key players who are failing to contribute. And as optimistic and as positive as I've managed to stay about this team and throughout this season, I think I won't say today is the nail in the coffin, because I don't like immediate extreme negative reactions. I think they're often wrong, but at this point, I'm not looking at one game of data. I'm looking at 118, and we can get into reasons why I think there's still something there, but at some point, there being something there needs to manifest in the form of good play on the field. And frankly, we just haven't seen that often enough this season from the Yankees. And today was just another example of the kind of game in which the thing that we've been waiting for, offense, goes right and pitching goes wrong. It felt very reminiscent of the final game of the Astros series to me. And I don't know how many times I can watch that type of game. How are you feeling?
I mean, you can't feel good after that happens. And
I certainly don't.
It's on one hand, you're looking at a game where a very good pitcher didn't have a good day, and that's the reason why they lost. And on another hand, you're looking at a season in which every game now is a must win, and the Yankees have backed themselves into a corner. And so they have lost the privilege to have games like that. I remember a lot at the end of last year where the phrase I kept coming back to was that they've bought themselves the time and earned the right to, you know, lose a few games because they had built up such a big lead. And that's just how a season goes. I mean, this is the exact reverse scenario in which you can't not be upset at something like this, because it's not just one game. Every game is essentially a must-win game. And when you're 44 games out of the final game of the season, that shows me you're in a bad position. And this would be heartbreaking under any circumstance, but I think given the context of the week and the weeks and the months, the fact that the Yankees have, again, had one winning week since early June, so they've only won 2 series against the worst teams in baseball, and every time it seems like they're on the precipice of doing that, they find a new way to disappoint us. I think being angry today over one game might be, you know, it might be overreacting in another world and another context, but given everything that's happened, given this team's propensity to just fall apart at certain times, all the heartbreaking losses we've seen, and given their record and place in the standings, I think it's just the ultimate, you know, frustration boiling over, the ultimate kind of embarrassment. I think the nail in the coffin maybe might be an example, but to me it feels like the nail's already in the coffin, and every loss like this, it's just hammering it further and further, because technically they're still alive, but they're running out of time, and I think nothing has made me optimistic, and that's going to turn around. And the days that I am optimistic, they find a way to pull the optimism away.
Yeah, so as we just recap this week, Yankees lose a Cole start on Monday. They go 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position. They break out of it on Tuesday and win 7-1. They try to pair Severino up with an opener on Wednesday. He still doesn't have it. Albert Abreu makes it even worse. They come back on Friday, put up 9 runs. Beautiful performance, something like 7-for-13 with runners in scoring position. Judge hits a massive home run. Alcantara shuts him down on Saturday. And then, of course, this afternoon, Sunday afternoon, they blow a 4-run lead in the 9th inning. And I don't really want to discuss the specifics of almost any of the baseball that happened this week because it was all, much of it was so miserable to watch. But I do want to talk about the 9th inning of today's game because you made an interesting comment and I don't agree with it. So why don't you give me your assessment of the 9th inning of the game today and we can talk about the merits of your points.
Yeah, I think as I was alluding to, in context, this is a pretty horrific loss. But like you said, the offense did show up today and the pitching faltered at the end of the game. And I guess one way to look at it is that a pitcher who's been pretty good all year had a rough game. And there are certainly moments within that 9th inning that I would criticize. I mean, Clay Holmes getting a ground ball back to him and then not holding it or throwing it is just indefensible. But giving up a double after probably leads you to about the same outcome. And
but so here's the thing. What you said to me when we got on the call is Clay Holmes didn't have it. Do you believe that Clay Holmes didn't have it?
I mean, by the last three batters of the game, four batters, when he's walking Jazz Chisholm and giving up a double to, or sorry, last three batters of his at-bats, giving up a triple to Arias. I mean, this was not a sharp Clay Holmes.
Okay, but here's the thing.
He got the ground ball that he needed to.
He got the ground balls a million times. So the Gurriel ball, sure, it was hard hit and it was in the air. It only had a 480 XBA and you have Harrison Bader in center field. I'm not going to say that shouldn't have been a hit. It was scalded. It was hit into the gap. Like, you give them that. He strikes out John Birdie. Fine. Then what happens? Infield ground ball, expected batting average 190, ends up being an infield hit. Then what happens? Walk. Okay, fine. Then what happens? Ground ball directly back to the pitcher. He bobbles it. He throws it away. That, like, right there, you have the ball back to him, the Fortes ball, the strikeout, and the Gurriel ball. All you needed was three of those four to be outs. And then even the Arise ball was not hard hit, was 93.7 miles an hour, and it was a ground ball. It had an expected batting average of 370. I don't know that Jake Bowers necessarily should have fielded it. Maybe if he was playing back instead of holding the runner on, he gets to it. Whatever. My point is, Clay Holmes got the ground ball one, two, three times at least, plus a strikeout, plus a fly ball that the majority of the time is not a hit. So I don't know that Clay Holmes didn't have it. And when we're talking about a team that's about to go to Atlanta and use openers in multiple games and a team that is obviously trying to win every game and fight tooth and nail to do it, leaving your best guy out there when he is getting, with the exception of the Gurriel at bat, the kind of contact that you want him to get, I find it really hard to argue against that. Like, Clay Holmes got BABIPped. And you know what? Tommy Canley shouldn't have given up that hit to Jake Berger, and the Yankees shouldn't have been in that situation, and Clay Holmes shouldn't have made that error, and maybe they should have just scored more runs to make it a non-issue, whatever. But the idea that Clay Holmes didn't have it or that Boone is so wrong for not taking him out, I'm really actually not sold on that, given that he got the ground ball three times.
No, I mean, I agree with you that he should have been in there. I don't think he had it, didn't have it to the level that it was indefensible to not take him out. I also don't think taking him out is going to solve anything. I mean, we saw what Tommy Canley came in and did. I just feel like not having it is like, I mean, he didn't look as sharp as we had seen him. We've seen him look before. I'm going to totally hold against him the fact that he threw that ground ball away. And I think the larger thing to me is I'm not as angry as at Clay Holmes as I think a lot of people are. I think what frustrates me and what I kept in the back of my mind earlier in the game is that this defense is just sloppy sometimes. I mean, think about the earlier plays that led to runs, like Cole in the second or third inning. Volpe should have turned that into a double play. He couldn't hold on to it. A run scores.
Yep, so there's Billy McKinney play in the corner in left field.
Right. You're talking about little things that add up, and in a lot of situations, they don't really matter, but they ended up mattering here. Yep. And that frustrates me, just as, again, it frustrated me that Clay Holmes made a dumb decision, couldn't hold on to the ball. Mm-hmm. And even though the Arias ball was, had, you know, as a ground ball, you don't have a good defensive first baseman over there. It's just like all the little things add up after a while.
Well, and okay, I
that's what I'm annoyed about.
You get a ground ball hit in the vicinity of someone. I generally agree with you, though. I think that
the earlier stuff is more damning, in my opinion.
The earlier stuff is definitely more damning. It was a bad feed from Cole to Volpe, but Volpe needs to be able to turn that double play. McKinney needs to be able to get that ball back in and either get Bell at the plate or hold Bell at third. The Yankees did a lot of stuff poorly in today's game, but man, on back-to-back Sundays to lose games in which they scored 7 runs, it would just be so different to be, what would it be, 62-56 than 60-58? And that's like, they're on such thin ice. Right. And it's so hard Sundays, deal with.
Think about, let's look at some other Sundays. Colorado.
Yep.
You have a multi-run lead in that game. I mean, the heartbreakers, if you want to go way back, I'm thinking back to Tampa in May. Yeah, like
6-run lead.
Another, just like, there are games where teams should win and don't, but they're close games. So obviously within the margin of error. And then there are games like these last few that we just referenced.
You can't blow huge leads. You just can't do it.
Leads like that with your ace on the mound. And almost every game we're talking about, aside from the Astros game, your ace was on the mound. And Cole, I mean, he was only responsible, in my opinion, for the Tampa game. But you're screwing yourself. And you give up 3 runs in one game and you give up 8 runs in the next game. You probably, you know, like it's logical. It's funny to me that you're closer to winning the one you gave up 8 runs in. But like, if you're going to head into the 9th inning only giving up 2 runs, you got to win one of those games at least.
I mean, if you told me the Yankees were going to score, 17 runs in this series and allow, I guess it was only, was it only 17 to 15?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Either way, if you told me the Yankees were going to score 17 runs in this series, I would have felt pretty good. And maybe that is like the takeaway here. Maybe, look, they got to Yuri Perez, who's an extremely good pitcher, and they got to a couple of the guys on the Marlins staff in the first game. And sure, they didn't touch Sandy, but Sandy's been really good since the All-Star break. And maybe that's the takeaway, but for me to have confidence in this team going into Atlanta this week is an extremely tough proposition. I don't know how to feel good about it. And then, sure, they have the series. You know, they play the Red Sox 3 times, the Nationals 3 times, the Rays 3 times, and the Tigers 3 times. And you say, okay, you know, maybe you can make some hay there, but I just feel like I do not feel good about this Atlanta series, and I don't want to think about what it looks like for a Yankees team to be under 500 on August 17th, but I'm very, very worried about that being a reality that I have to face.
Yeah, I think this team, to me, it's like every possible break has gone against them, but that's good teams win those games where the breaks go against you. Like this weekend, you face Sandy Alcantara, one of the best pitchers in baseball. He throws a complete game. You could tip your cap and say, oh, he threw a great game, but then you can't turn around on Sunday and say, oh, Clay Holmes won't have it sometimes. Like, you got to win some of the games with any level of adversity. I think the Yankees have only really won games in the last month and a half where everything's kind of gone their way. Like, I think about the series in Baltimore we were at. Like, the Yankees won a game on Saturday in which pretty much everything went right for them. They got their pitchers got pounded on Sunday. Their offense went dead on Friday. You got to win at least one of those games either. And they could have won all of those games really easily. And that's what this series feels like to me. They could have won every game really easily, but the offense went dead for one game. The pitching went dead for another game. And again, they haven't, like you said, been playing like the best teams, but the caliber of team, it's going to go up. But also there's just, in my mind, there's so many teams right now in this wild card race. Like every day you have to win. Like, think about what the last few days have been like. Even the games you win, probably one of those other teams is going to win. So this team, the worst thing that they have shown is that they can't win games where anything goes against them. But they just can't string wins together. And pretty much every Yankees team that has been successful, and even the ones that haven't, have had a month where they're like 20-10. I mean, I guess this team kind of had that in May, but they go on like a 10-game winning streak, and that's really how you have the stretches that help you withstand those stretches where things don't go right. This team was mediocre for a month, really good for a month, and then pretty bad for 2 months, and that's just going to lead you to your 60-58 record. So it's just frustrating on all angles, and I think that they are really, really realizing why that stretch against Chicago, Colorado,
St. Louis,
LA, St. Louis, like why that was so damning that they couldn't pull out a series victory in that stretch.
So I want to talk to you about the things or thing that I think is most responsible or are most responsible for the season playing out the way it has. And you know how I feel about this. We had a tweet go very viral that drew the ire of some people and the respect of others that was about this. If you had to name one thing that is responsible for the Yankees being where they are 118 games into this year, what would that thing be?
So it want like one player or one like group of things or
whatever, however you want to interpret that. If you were to make a list blaming things, the abstract category things. Of things, that you feel best explain why the Yankees have been the way they've been this year, what would be at the top of that list? It can be a player, it can be a position group, it can be whatever you want.
Yeah, to me, I feel like I've centered around a few guys, but it really comes down in my mind to two guys, Giancarlo Stanton and Anthony Rizzo, just being completely non-factors, or at least in Rizzo's case, non-factors after May 26th, because we saw the impact that it had when he was. I've said in the past that Gleyber Torres and DJ LeMahieu are probably the keys to the Yankees lineup, but I also think when I said that, I assumed that Stanton and Rizzo, at the very least, would be able to be consistent power threats. And I think that the fact, even without Judge, the fact that you have a lineup where the two guys aside from Judge, because you can blame Judge's injury, but this team hasn't particularly done well with him. And I think he's played really well when he's been on the field. To me, Stan and Rizzo being non-factors for a good part of the season has thinned out this lineup so much that Gleyber Torres and DJ LeMahieu, even when playing well, are not able to, because they don't have the potential impact that they should have as like the fourth or fifth best guys. Instead, they're suddenly the best guys in the lineup or best behind Judge. And that, in my mind, just doesn't cut it. I think Stanton and Rizzo being so far off of what we reasonably expected, not even like 2021 Giancarlo Stanton or first 2 months Rizzo. I mean, for them just to be complete non-factors for the most part has really tanked this offense. And I think people might say the pitching, the rotation, but if you look at these games, I mean, even like Saturday, they're giving up 3 runs. They're not giving up that many runs. The bullpen might be extended, but pitching's getting the job done for the most part. I know we're saying this after a pitching-fueled collapse, but for me, it's the offense and those two guys at the heart of the offense.
That makes sense. So when you think about Anthony Rizzo and Giancarlo Stanton and their performances this year, do you feel like those performances, do you fault the Yankees for not expecting that this is the level of production that they would get out of Anthony Rizzo and Giancarlo Stanton?
No, I don't fault them. I think that's what a lot of people want to relitigate right now. I definitely believe that more needed to be done to provide options for this team, for depth options or more impact players, but again, at the end of the day, the guys that you're employing who have done well need to keep doing well for your team to be successful. I don't think it's unreasonable or unfair for the Yankees to come into the season and say Anthony Rizzo and Giancarlo Stanton are going to be important parts of this lineup.
Agreed. So for anyone who didn't see it, and I don't think that will be many of you, but for anyone who didn't see it, on Friday before the game, I tweeted, Seve hurt or bad all year. Rodon hurt or bad all year. DJ bad all year. Stanton hurt or bad most of the year. Judge hurt much of the year. Loaisiga hurt most of the year. Herman bad, gone after July. Cabrera nothing offensively. Peraza nothing offensively. Volpe almost nothing offensively. Catchers all terrible. Mike King briefly unusable. Rizzo historically bad, hurt. Bader hurt or bad all year. Nestor hurt then bad, then hurt, then good, one start, then hurt. I understand people had criticisms of this roster coming into the season, but to act like this is anything but a first percentile outcome for this team is heinous. Look at everything that had to go wrong, and they're technically still not dead. That's absurd. If you're saying you saw this coming, you either underestimated what would have to go wrong for the team to be this bad, because nobody would have predicted all of this, and therefore you're wrong in my estimation, or you're lying. And that tweet really popped off, and a lot of people were in our mentions responding to it, telling me how likely all of these factors, these 15 factors, if you take them under performance and injury just to be one thing together and not individual things, but these 15 points I made, they were telling me how likely they all were. Well, Whipple, if all 15 of those things individually had 80% chances of happening, the likelihood of them all happening together is 3.5%. And it's impossible to argue that all of these things had 80% chances of happening, because Luis Severino, Nestor Cortes, and Carlos Rodon all had worse than first percentile outcomes if we measure against their Picota projections. DJ LeMahieu has a first percentile outcome. Anthony Rizzo has a worse than first percentile outcome. Anthony Volpe has a third percentile outcome. Aaron Judge, even if you ignore the injury part, has a 15th percentile outcome, 30th for Stanton, 30th for Bader. So there's no world in which all of those things were as likely as people try to convince me they are. And even if there were, it would not be the case that all of them being individually pretty likely makes it likely that this would be the outcome. Hell, even if all of those things individually had 95% probabilities of happening, the chance of them all happening together would still be under 50%. So that's what bothers me so much about this team, and it's what I feel like people miss so much in the way that I talk about this team. When I am less critical of the front office than a lot of others are, people say that I'm an apologist and I'm a shill and I must be Brian Cashman's burner account and things like that. No, we can acknowledge that sometimes things go really well and sometimes things go really poorly. And people were responding, oh, well, it seems like stuff goes really poorly for this team all the time. Does it? People kept sending me stuff about how many players got hurt in 2019. You know what else happened in 2019? Every single guy that they brought in had like his 80th or 90th percentile possible season, and they won 103 games. People were telling me, oh, you couldn't watch last year and tell that this was going to happen. No, when the team won 99 games and Stanton was good and DJ was good and Rizzo was good and Glaber was good and Trevino was good and Nestor was phenomenal and Severino was good when he was healthy. Like, what? What are you talking about? People are legitimately insane in the way that they're reacting to this. It's not apologetics or shilling or defense of the front office to say what has happened to the Yankees this year was an extremely unlikely set of outcomes. It doesn't mean that those things haven't happened. It doesn't mean that the Yankees shouldn't in the future try to hedge even more against those things happening. But what do they say about the best laid plans? Like, at some point, you are still at the mercy of just probabilistic distribution, and guys aren't as clustered around the median as we would have wanted them to be this year. And a lot of that was skewed towards the lower end of their outcomes. And the injury luck's been bad, the underperformance has been bad, but the idea that the Yankees should have predicted this, or that the Yankees were a third place team at best, even if they hadn't had any of those things happen, go away. Like, go home. Log off the internet, because you are so wrong about that. And I've just been so frustrated with the way that people talk about this team and the way that people explain why this team is bad or the way that people say, oh yeah, I absolutely saw this coming. No, you didn't. No, you absolutely didn't. Because those 15 things that I listed, those are the things that had to come together in the way that they did for the team to be this bad. If you were screaming in April when Judge was healthy and Stanton was on a tear and Rizzo was on a tear and LeMahieu was on a tear and most of the pitching staff was healthy about how this was going to be a 500 team, you are objectively wrong. And that's what people don't get. And I'm so frustrated with the discourse and the fact that I can't make a cogent, coherent, relevant, correct point about what has gone on with this team this year without idiots jumping into our mentions and telling me that I wasn't pessimistic enough makes me so angry. It makes me not enjoy watching the team. It makes me not enjoy being on Twitter. It makes me not want to do this podcast. And it's just like, the fact that everyone becomes brain dead when stuff goes wrong is like one of the greatest flaws of Yankees Twitter. And I love Yankees Twitter and we've made a lot of friends from it. And it is the thing that supports us being able to do this podcast and have people read our tweets and our blogs. And that's awesome. And I think we have tapped into a particularly educated and intelligent and thoughtful audience. And I'm very thankful for that. But oh my gosh, I almost don't want more people to see our tweets the way that people react to just like the most reasonable thing. Okay, I'm done with my rant.
You don't want to do the podcast anymore?
I still want to do the podcast.
Okay. No, I couldn't agree more. This team has built its brand off of being in contention and being good every year and not allowing all of those first percentile outcomes to happen. And I don't think people appreciate that enough. They don't appreciate that that is not a guarantee and that stuff happens in baseball. And that doesn't mean this team isn't bad right now or couldn't be bad at the end of the year, because it absolutely does mean that. But people, I think, need to realize that what, like, the outliers are not that this team is so much worse than some people thought and everyone was right about it. The outlier is the fact that this team was really good last year and because they had a lot of good players and people didn't want to admit that. I think it's fair to criticize this year, but it still bothers me, like you said, that people criticized last year because last year there was no indication of change.
No. What do you mean by it's fair to criticize this year?
No, it's fair to say they're bad this year. I'm saying,
oh, sure. Yeah. No, absolutely.
No.
Bad this
I'm saying,
year. Yeah, absolutely.
What's unfair is to say, like you said, that they were bad last year and they were bad in 2021 because, like, they were not as good as people expected in 2021, but that team had a 13 game winning streak. They played really well in very important games. And I think people miss the forest for the trees and can't analyze seasons properly. Totally. Like, it's very fun to do World Series or bust. That's part of being a Yankees fan. But at some point, like, you have to actually watch the games on the field and look at the players, look at their statistics, look at what's going on right in front of you, as opposed to just saying, you know, either this happens or this happens. And
yeah, nobody actually believes that every year in which you don't win the World Series is the same.
Right.
Nobody actually believes that. Like, people will respond like, I guess there's the Derek Jeter quote, I think it is, about like, well, how do you rate losing or how do you compare losses? And it's like, no one actually believes that. I'm sorry. If you want to tell me that, like, the 1988 Yankees and the 2019 or 2017 or 2022 Yankees are the same team, or like the 1968 Yankees, no, you're not a sane person. You are not in a mentally healthy space. I advise you to go seek out help. Nobody actually believes that watching a team win 40% of its games and watching a team go to the ALCS is the same thing. Nobody believes that.
This is, I mean, I could break out my hottest take of all time, which is that the 90s Yankees ruined this fan base forever. But,
you break it out. If there's any time to do it, it's right now.
So, I mean, we're all watching The Captain last summer, right? And I'm just listening to this, and I'm like, this is, some of the stuff he's saying is kind of unhinged. Like, people,
it is, and it's stuff you can only say because you win four World Series in five years. What did he do from 2001 to 2008?
Oh my God! Like,
people, how
are
did Derek Jeter remain
us.
Alive?
People are gonna come after us, but nobody
do
is
it.
Nobody is above the normal forces of statistical probability and baseball. Like, that team was incredibly good. We should all be appreciative that we can look back, have watched them. just know that they are a part of Yankees history. But to expect that that's the norm, I think that set this fan base and this franchise on a course where it's the disease of more, where you're never going to be happy with anything. And I don't care if you want to go in and say that's the expectation. That's fine. For a lot of Yankees teams, it is a very reasonable expectation. For this Yankees team, it was an extremely reasonable expectation. But at sometimes, that's not reality. That's not how this team is playing. That's how last year's team was playing. That's probably not how 2021's team was playing. But because of what I just said, I think the assessment of all three of those teams, which were all three very different teams that I think realistically could or can achieve different things, ended up being exactly the same. And that manifests in the comment that were made on your Twitter post that you were just referring to. I think everybody is completely approaching things the wrong way. And that is not a preclusion to saying this team is flat out awful right now. I don't know what is needed to initiate change. I don't know what change is needed. I know there will probably need to be some change, probably more drastic change, but that's because we're watching a team right now that is not playing well. And last year we watched a team that played well, and the assessment and the corrections needed to both of those teams is not the same thing, despite people's assertion that what the 2023 team needs to fix is what the 2022 team needed to fix. If you're saying that, you didn't actually watch the team last year. You watched probably 10 games in August and made an assessment off of that.
Yeah, people have...
Or four games at the end of the year. It's ridiculous. I mean, we're just as frustrated as everyone else. And I feel like if anyone listens to it, it's going to get lost that we're frustrated because people will just latch on to the other stuff we said.
I think it's pretty evident that we're frustrated. You're right that people will latch on to the other stuff we said, but if someone listens, like if you were teaching like a small child about different emotions, stick with me here. If you were teaching a small child about different emotions, but the child was blind, stick with me.
And the child's name was Babe Ruth.
That's not where I was going. So you're teaching a kid about different emotions, but the kid is blind. So normally I imagine, I don't have any children myself, but normally I imagine you teach a child to associate, or a child learns to associate faces with emotions, right? Someone smiling is happy, someone frowning is sad, etc. If you were teaching this blind child to read emotions through tone of voice and you had them listen to this podcast, I'd be surprised if they didn't come away with, hey, those guys seem frustrated. So to anyone listening to this podcast, if you come away thinking we aren't frustrated, then you have less emotional intelligence than a small child who can't see people's faces but can still determine their emotions. So just let that sit with you. Think about it before you respond, okay? Thank you.
Well-made point, and I'd like to meet this hypothetical child and see what he thinks.
I'm sure you could meet plenty of blind children.
Yeah, it sucks. It's frustrating. This is an absolutely worst case scenario for what I think was a very promising season. But you have to assess it like that, and don't assess it like this is the manifestation of something that's been brewing for a decade and a half.
Exactly.
And I'm just convinced
the big analytical flaw of a lot of people on Yankees Twitter is they say they believe in probability, but they actually don't. So for many people on Yankees Twitter, and we talked about this when the Yankees played the Astros in the ALCS, a result happening proves that there was some guarantee, some cosmic guarantee that that would be the result. And that's not the case. Like, I tweeted about those 15 things and so many people just responded, well, that's what happened, so clearly it wasn't that unlikely. No. Like, is that what you say when Appalachian State beats Michigan in football? You say, oh, well, it happened, so clearly it wasn't unlikely. Like, there's never been an upset or a surprise in any of these people's lives because something happening proves that it has 100% chance of happening.
Right.
Like, I don't understand how you end up in that situation. Like, these people have never flipped a coin, I guess. But anyway, go ahead.
And I think the last thing I'd say is it also doesn't preclude saying that more should have been done in the offseason.
No, absolutely.
It doesn't preclude everyone's favorite comment that Baron Cashman needs to be replaced. It doesn't preclude any real discussion about this team.
What
it
does preclude,
it just, the only thing it precludes is saying that this was predictable. This team has sucked all year, and that was very evident. And the fact that they were always going to suck was laid out in front of us, except we were too blind to see it. This team was statistically the best, one of the best teams in the league coming into the year. And as you said, every possible outcome went wrong, which also means they didn't play well. Like, that's,
yeah,
they got injured. They didn't play well. If you want to stop talking about in probability terms, like, that's how you can say it. But those things all had to happen, and the likelihood of them all happening was low. Like, we could just talk in circles about this. The point
is, so we should.
Like, yeah, that's how you should analyze it if you want to have educated discussion. I'm sure we will be talking a lot about this. I don't know where this team goes from here. Probably Atlanta, but also, like, when we're talking about it, let's talk about the 2023 Yankees, not the 2013 to 2023 Yankees.
Atlanta, where the players play. So, yes. Whipple, we have a very special feature on this episode, and I was able to listen to it earlier, and I thought it was absolutely terrific. A lot of people know our dad take or bad take segment. My dad has been a frequent guest. Your dad has been a frequent guest. I think people will be disappointed that your dad did not respond to my dad calling him out in his most recent appearance. So we can start with that. If that's what you're listening for, you're going to be disappointed, but you'll be pleased in other ways because it's a great segment. But you had your dad back on the podcast, and he delivered as always with one of the hottest baseball takes that I think anyone has, just period. But we had a very, very special guest, and I'd like you to tell the listeners who that is.
So, dad take or bad take expanded when my mom sat down at the proverbial round table. The table
for the first installment of Mother Take or Other Take.
As I said, I knew you would have a good exactly. name for it, so I kind of left it up to you, and you certainly delivered. But yeah, my mom was super excited to join. I think what I would say about my dad is he's like a movie star in that, like, he, you know, he's hard to pin down. He has very hot takes. He's not always most enthusiastic about getting on the pod, but then he comes on and he delivers the performance of a lifetime, and he's making millions at the box office. And you remember why you sat down and listened to Doug Whipple. And as for my mom, as I said on the pod, probably the woman behind the scenes, if Doug Whipple is the starring role, my mom is the director. She has done so much and supporting this podcast, and as she said on the interview, she's seen us from when we were 10 years old talking about this stuff. So
constant banter.
One of the women, one of the matriarchs of Yankees Files, and it was just a pleasure to have her on to talk about us, to talk about her Yankees experience, just talk about things she enjoys about the team. We nailed down these back-to-back interviews never before in Yankees Files history. And although the vibes aren't great, I think this will help a little bit, improve the mood and make sure this is at least a palatable episode. It's not just us yelling for an hour. only yelled for 30 minutes since this happened.
So without further ado, let's throw it to another installment of Dad Take or Bad Take and the first installment of Mother Take or Other Take with Whipple and his parents.
And we are back with our third edition of Dad Take or Bad Take. And we have a very special guest. But first, I want to start with our favorite recurring guest, my dad. We have had two great episodes of Dad Take or Bad Take. Flashing back 2 years ago, we were recording in the middle of the Yankees' 13-game winning streak. Things looked good for that team. Didn't end the way we wanted to. Last year, we recorded in August. The Yankee season was falling apart. Ultimately ended up winning the division, but at that point it didn't look good for them either. And this might be the most dire Yankee season yet. The my dad and I went to a Yankees game in May of 2023 where the Yankees looked like they're going to compete for the division. And since then, they've had about one winning week of baseball. So this has not been, as Joe Girardi said, what you want. It has not been a very fun Yankee season, but we're still going to find positive moments to discuss. And again, we have a very special surprise guest, but let's start with Dad. Dad, how are you doing today?
Good.
So we've had you on twice, your third appearance, and as I said, not the best Yankee season, but what's your overall thoughts on the team? Have they disappointed you? Have you been surprised at all? Just generally a bird's eye view, what's your thought on the 2023 season?
Disband the entire organization, start from scratch. I think Cashman's got to go. I think signing him to a long-term contract was a huge mistake. Disband Cashman, reorganize. Boone is gone. The medical team should be disbanded. They really need to reorganize from the ground up, or the top, I should say, from the top down. This is extremely disappointing for all the fans, and I'm not alone in my sentiments.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty strong sentiment these days. Cashman and Boone have really put together a team that has underperformed. But I want to focus on what you said about the medical staff, because last week was a pretty rough week for the Yankees medical staff. We heard about Domingo Germán being locked in the sauna by his teammates to try to sweat out alcohol. We heard about Anthony Rizzo playing with a concussion for 2 months. As a doctor, I think you might have more expertise than most people to speak on this. But what do you think about Anthony Rizzo specifically, his concussion that he was diagnosed with? What should the Yankees staff had done in May to diagnose this? Where did they fall short, in your opinion, in misdiagnosing Anthony Rizzo?
I mean, I'm not on the inside, so I can't tell you where they misdiagnosed or where they let it slide. But from an outsider looking in, it sounds to me like somebody in an organization is not doing their job or is letting things slide. And there you're seeing a lot. Most of the Yankees end up in Somerset. I've seen more major leaguers down in Somerset than I have at Yankee Stadium. I mean, it's appalling to see what's going on with the medical aspect of the team. And I don't know if there's cover-up or if there's just complacency, but something's not right with this team when you look at all the injuries. And I don't know what, you know, I'm certainly not the guy that could tell you how to repair or how to fix, but as a fan, boy, it's got to be disappointing. I mean, it is disappointing to see these guys playing, if not injured, come back from their injuries and then end up on the IL like a week later. Nestor, come on. You can't blame the players, but what's going on with the organization? I mean, it's really hard to fathom. Now, this is, it's not unique or isolated to the Yankees, but certainly it's an ongoing problem that needs to be addressed. And hopefully the Yankees will address the situation going forward for future teams.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is this is not Yankees-like. In all the years that you've watched the Yankees, they're usually under Jeter. It's a very buttoned-up organization. They don't really do stuff like this. I think it's been very surprising to see or hear incidents such as Domingo Germán or Anthony Rizzo, where you don't know what's going on inside, but from the outside, it looks like mismanagement. And given the way they've played on the field, it just hasn't been the most rewarding season given the expectations going in. But I want to step back. You mentioned Somerset, and when you're on the pod, we always like to talk about the fun experiences we've had together. We've obviously been to a lot of spring training games. We've been to Fenway. We were at Yankee Stadium this year. But I think the most enjoyable experience we had was taking the drive to Somerset back in May to watch Luis Severino pitch a rehab game, to see Jason Dominguez and Austin Wells and Everson Pereira. And I just want to hear your thoughts on that, because I had a great time seeing both Severino and the Yankees of the future. So what's your review of the Somerset facilities, the Somerset Patriots team, or just generally what you think about the future of the Yankees? Because I think the Somerset Patriots have gotten a lot of attention for all the players that they've been rostering. But there's a difference between hearing about it and then actually going to see these guys play.
Anybody who knows going to a minor league game or a spring training game, it's just a different vibe as compared to going to a major league game. But it's just a blast going down to I'm just thinking Tampa. I love going to Steinbrenner and watching the Yankees in spring training. It's just so much fun with the pressure off and watching the new guys being showcased. And then it's Somerset. It's the same situation, but it's a different level, a different time of year, obviously. But it's still it's just fun watching young players developing and under a different, lower pressure situation, in my opinion, anyway, from an outsider, as an outsider. But it's a blast. Everybody should get to, if you live in New Jersey, Somerset, to watch a Patriots game. It's absolutely fun. You know, $5 parking, easy in, easy out. It was a blast. We had a great time.
And you saw Jason Dominguez, Yankees' top prospect. When you saw him, we saw him homer. Did he look like a future major leaguer to you?
I mean, unquestionably, this kid is talented. And you could tell with the power that this guy packs. He's fun to watch. And a lot of the players that are at that level, at the minor league level, are just fun to watch in their development. But, yeah, Jason Dominguez, the Martian, I mean, he's going to be definitely on the – I know he's on their radar, but this kid is coming up fast. So I'm surprised he's not already at the major league level. But he will be soon.
Yeah, we got Jason Dominguez pennants, and given the Yankees' need for an outfielder, he could find himself in the Bronx sooner rather than later. Now, the last thing I want to ask you, this might be my hardest-hitting question, but you have a baseball opinion that I think 99% of America disagrees with. And I mentioned this to Will, and it boggles my mind that you think this, but you're on an island, and when everybody hears this take, I think it will shock you. You are maybe America's only Zach Hample fan. And so I just want to hear a bit about why you like Zach Hample and to defend your love of this guy who every Twitter post, every time he catches a ball, all I see is Zach Hample hate, Zach Hample crucifixion. He's probably the most hated guy in baseball, but you are there defending him. We went to Yankees Orioles in May, and he caught one of Cedric Mullins' home run balls there. So there, you obviously have some sort of connection. So what's your – give me the two-minute pitch for why we should – support Zach Hample instead of get angry at him?
It's simple. Watch his YouTube videos. The guy is a good – he comes off as a really good guy. Maybe it's the editing in his videos. Okay, maybe I'm missing something here. But I saw him go to a game with his mom. I saw a bunch of games where he gives away all the balls. He doesn't need to keep collecting balls. But he, you know, he's going for a record, and he seems like a decent guy. But it's really fun to watch his videos, and he's obviously got a lot of followers, and watch all the kids that want to get selfies with this guy. I mean, he's not as bad as he can come off, I suppose, but I get a good feeling about this kid doing positive things for the sport, and not just in it for, you know, himself. Now, you can offer your opinion. I'd appreciate to hear that. I respect that, but I think it's fun watching Zach Hample catch balls on those videos, and it's just, you know, it's nothing complex, nothing serious, but it's fun to watch, and I think a lot of baseball fans appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I know you're a fan of the baseball collectible YouTube archives. You watch Phil Hughes pull baseball cards and discuss them. You're watching Zach Hample, so you definitely have your niche, and a lot of people think Zach Hample's robbing baseballs from other kids, but there's no doubt that he is a well-known figure, and so I respect your support, and you are willing to go out on this ledge where no one else is willing to go out. So I do appreciate that, and I've given you a chance to share your opinion, so everyone else will have to let us know what they think. But thank you, Dad. It's always fun. But now we're going to introduce a third. Oh, he wants to respond.
Thank you. And just another shout out to, if he's listening, and he might be, Jabba Chamberlain. Come on, Will, you and Alec can get Jabba on your podcast. Go Yankees. I still have faith that the team may pull something off this year, but it's not looking great. So hopefully things will turn around.
Yeah, we'll let you go. But before you do, before we bring on our surprise guest, we always ask our fans to have, or our guests to, for a confidence rating. And so I know you're maybe optimistic, maybe pessimistic, but can you just give us between 1 and 10, what's your optimism, your confidence in the Yankees for the rest of the season to turn it around? Or long-term, do you think there's hope that Boone and Cashman might be fired? There might be a rebuild in the works? Or do you just, are you at a one? Are you just completely down on this team's future and present?
You put me on the spot. You know, honestly, right now I'm at the lower end of that, the numerical spectrum as to the my confidence level for this year's team. But, you know, I won't quote the Mets with the you gotta believe, but I do always have hope. That's what gets us through the day. So let's hope this Yankee team could turn things around. And regardless, we still, you know, if you we bleed pinstripes, we're still diehards, and it's still, you know, regardless of my daily opinions, looking at the category, they're standing in the category in the AL East behind the bloody Red Sox. I still think the team has a chance. There you go.
Yeah, only four games out of a playoff spot, and we'll see what happens. They got to start playing better, but you heard it here. There is some optimism that it can happen. So thank you, Dad, as always. It's always fun to have you on, but usually that means it's the end of our segment. But today we actually have a surprise special guest who has asked to come on the pod for 2 years, has really, if my dad and I always go to the games, we have a great time. Where he's the front man of the, you know, the face of Dad Take or Bad Take. I would say she's behind the scenes. She has made sure that my baseball fandom has been able to continue. She, in fact, has been a Yankees fan longer than either of the people who have been on this segment. And we have asked her to come on the pod now to celebrate our third edition of Dad Take or Bad Take. I don't really know how to loop Mom Take into the title, but I'm sure Will will figure out a way. But for the first time on Yankees Files, it is my mom, Cynthia Whipple. Mom, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're really excited. I know Will is going to be thrilled to listen in and comment on your appearance. He, maybe even more than me, has asked you to come on multiple times. But you're here now, and even though the Yankees aren't doing well this season, I want to ask about bigger questions than the 2023 Yankees. As I said, you've been a fan longer than my dad and I. You've been a fan since your childhood. My dad, as he mentioned on previous Dad Take or Bad Take episodes, didn't become a Yankees fan until he moved to New York. But you grew up in New Jersey, have been a fan your whole life. So I'd love to hear a little bit about how your fandom started.
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in New Jersey, so you were either a Yankees or Mets fan, and I loved watching the antics of Billy Martin with my family. I collected baseball cards, so it was so fun to get your favorite players, Guidry and Lyle. And then when Thurman Munson died, I think that sort of unified the whole Yankee family forever.
Yeah, I mean, this is stuff that we read about and as Yankees fans, but you were around in the 70s, and I know you talked about Thurman Munson, but you watched the Reggie Jackson teams, the Chris Chambliss, you watched Guidry pitch, and the Yankees went back-to-back in the 70s. And I'd imagine those are part of some of your favorite moments, but I know you were also a fan in the 90s when it was the Jeter and Tino Martinez and Mariano and the 90s Yankees dynasties. So you've seen some pretty good moments as a Yankees fan. Do you have any moments that stick out in your mind specifically that either younger or older were really essential to your Yankees fandom?
Sure. Of course, I loved watching Reggie Jackson hit the three home runs in the World Series. That was my favorite. But actually more important than that is I loved when the Yankees started Hope Week. So that's always a favorite of mine. And I think that speaks volumes to them.
Yeah, Hope Week is something I know you've been really vocal about your appreciation for that initiative. And in 2009, I remember when that started. And I think finding out when it is each summer and learning about each of the stories that are that the Yankees are contributing to and highlighting is really important. And that kind of leads me, I guess, into another part of Yankees fandom that you really you embody. You are all about the family relationships. You like the games, you like the stories, but you love the connections that, say, Derek Jeter had to his family, or more recently, Aaron Judge and his parents, or his mom walking or watching him chase 62 and following him from ballpark to ballpark. So what really grabs you about the Yankees family relationships. I think we've seen it with Jeter. We've seen it with Judge. Anthony Volpe is another one who is very close with his parents. And it seems like a recurring part of Yankees history that there's going to be these strong family dynamics and mothers and fathers supporting their kids. So what's your favorite part about following that aspect of Yankees?
I think that's a huge part of why they're successful. The fact that they always had people cheering them on and the fact that they looked in the stands and they always had support in their families. So I think that speaks volumes to how they became who they are. So I love that aspect of the story.
Yeah, and it's one that I think we all enjoy watching. It really is a part of, I think, being on the Yankees is just being a solid person, having those connections to your family. And I know another one of your, player you like is Curtis Granderson, and that's someone who I think kind of had the same kind of connections with family and embodied that same type of person. So I would also love to hear just a little bit more about any favorite players you've had, whether it's the ones we've mentioned or any others that I didn't get to.
Like you said, I love Granderson, I love Jeter, I love Judge. I love anyone, because I don't know all of them, but I love anyone that is solid and has shown discipline and is a great role model, because I feel like as crazy as life gets, the fact that you can always come back to those role models is so important, especially for kids nowadays.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Yankees have always been really focused on that part of not just the games, but who they are as people and the image they portray. So, Mom, I was begging you for years to go to a game. You've obviously been to a lot of games in your life, but it has been a while since you went to Yankee Stadium. And finally, we all got tickets to Yankees Orioles this past May, as I mentioned. We drove in for the night, and it turned out to be one of, if not the greatest game I have been to. The Yankees came back from a 4-0 deficit. There was some mid-innings drama that looked like they were going to fall behind. DJ LeMahieu puts down a bunt and is unsuccessful. It looks like it's going to be a tough loss, but Aaron Judge homers in the ninth, and then Anthony Volpe's first walk-off hit or sac fly of his career. The Yankees win in extra innings. What was your thoughts about being back at the stadium, about seeing the current team, just your general experience? Because as I said, not everyone gets to see a game that fun, and we were very lucky to pick a really fun game to go to.
We were really lucky, and it was so much fun. And I loved being there because, again, it's a fixture, right? It's not much different than it was in the 70s or 80s or 90s. It might be a different ballpark, but the family and the systems are the same. And I love the constant of that. I love that you can rely on that to be the same. It's sort of a safe haven.
Yeah, and I think also all of that, and you can rely on the traffic in the Bronx to always be bad. And so you guys definitely experienced a little bit of that. I've just very lucky to be able to go to games with you both, whether it's spring training, which I know you've both been to, or just a random Wednesday night game in May. And I look forward to continuing that in the future, because as you said, it's constant and it's always going to be there. And it's one of my favorite things to do as a family. So the last thing I asked Dad about the confidence in the team, but I'm going to ask confidence and your thoughts on something a little bit different. As I said, you've really been supportive of this podcast. You've seen Will and I grow and talk about the Yankees and eventually switch to podcasting since we were in fifth grade. So I'd love to hear maybe your confidence or your thoughts in the future of Yankees Fouls and what you've seen so far and how you've enjoyed listening to it and your favorite parts of it and where it can go from here. So a little bit different, we have the Yankees Files actual confidence rating in the podcast. What are your thoughts on this creation that Will and I have worked on for the last 2 years?
I love it. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, I think it's a 12. Growing up, you two used to banter back and forth. And I think each of you is the only person that's really challenged the other person. So I see that on the pod. I love the dynamics. I love the banter. And you both are so knowledgeable. And for people that are not as knowledgeable, myself being one of them, it's sort of a glimpse into what we miss, because we just don't have the knowledge of perhaps the statistics or the games. So it's great. It's like having a little mentor to walk you through the games. And I love the banter. That's my favorite part, because it highlights both of your strengths.
Yeah, no, we appreciate your support. We appreciate Mrs. Harris's support. And I think now that you've been on, it seems like the clock is ticking for her to come on the podcast. But Yeah, we appreciate everything that both of you have done for us, and Mr. Harris and everyone in the Yankees Files extended family, I think, has been really important to the success of this podcast. Well, Mom, it's been really fun having you on. It's been fun having both of you on, but I'm thrilled that you got to come on as a first-time guest. And in the future, I think the trick to getting you to come on is to just drag you to more games. So I look forward to doing that. I know every guest we've had on this podcast, you know, always wants to come back on. So we'll use that as an opportunity to continue, you know, teaching you more about the Yankees. And in return, I think having the support of you and Dad and everyone else, as I said, is really important and much appreciated. So thank you both for your time. It's been awesome having you on for our yearly appearance. And I look forward to many Yankees Files, Dad Take or Bad Takes. And we'll have to figure out an expanded name if you and Mrs. Harris are also going to come on as well. So thanks so much, Mom. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. And I wait next year when we have Yankee File t-shirts.
I know. We'll have to put someone on that, since you have been bugging me about that for 2 years. Well, we're going to kick it back to the regular podcast. Thanks so much.
And we are back. Whipple, that was phenomenal. I mean, I had heard it before the episode, obviously, and I loved it. I thought your parents delivered, as they always do. I've been reflecting on what you said about Doug Whipple resisting and resisting coming on the podcast and then joining us and having a great time with it and wanting to do it again. It reminds me of when I was a little kid, I would talk about like how much I hated going to school, and I'd be like, I don't want to go. And then I would go to school and I'd like have fun with my friends and I'd like do well and stuff. And my parents would be like, oh, so like, do you like school now? And I'd be like, no. And that's kind of the energy that your dad brings to being on the Yankees Files podcast, which, although I'd like him to be a little bit more enthusiastic about it, I do have to admire it, respect it, and see where he's coming from.
You know, when the cameras start, when the record button is hit, Doug Whipple's there and he's ready to perform. And I think we'll save the you know, your dad's comment and the banter between fathers for another episode. But
yeah,
I think, yeah, my mom was really happy to be there. And, you know, I didn't want to touch off a dad war in her presence.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And what a lovely guest she was. The only two things that I was left wanting from your mother's portion of the interview. One, she didn't bring Jim Calhoun with her, nor any words of wisdom from Jim Calhoun. That was kind of disappointing. And two, you did not talk about her favorite baseball player, Christian Yelich.
I should have mentioned Christian Yelich. That was an oversight. And as for Jim Calhoun, I think his words underline everything my mom said about family and good energy and respect for the game and for each other. So Jim Calhoun is basically my mom. My mom worked at his the school, St. Joseph's, where Calhoun coached after UConn. For anyone who is not in on this extremely inside joke.
No one is in on this joke. Although, speaking of being in on inside jokes, I do need to shout out my dad, who texted me while he was listening to last week's episode, I get the he's nothing special joke. So,
does he actually get it?
He actually does get it. He actually does.
There we go. Slowly, we are bringing people into our extremely niche jokes. Eventually, everyone will get it.
So, Whipple, I think it's time for confidence. Your dad, I don't think, committed to a number, but he said he was on the lower end of the numerical spectrum, I believe is how it was phrased. And I think I am, too. Where are you going this week?
So, last week, I think it was at a 6.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's not, it definitely can't go up. It probably can't stay the same. I feel like we've been hesitant to go into the lower end of the numerical spectrum. But I'm gonna slowly inch there, I think. Because in my mind, like, either it keeps going in that direction, and we've always reserved the upper end of the numerical spectrum for when they're playing extremely well. We don't want to go and limit ourselves from that upper end.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how I feel here in the reverse direction, where I don't want to be overreacting to a two now because I think it can get a lot worse for this team.
Yeah.
I'm going to go at a five. I think it's fitting because they're five games out and they seem to put up a 3-3 or 3-4 or 2-4 a week almost every week, which is kind of, you know, that's middle of the road. I mean, they're not gaining games. They're losing a little ground, but they're kind of almost at a 500 record. And I feel like a five is appropriate for that level of play.
Five feels right to me. And that's, of course, the lowest either of us has ever gone. It's been a really disappointing year, man. You know, I don't feel like, and maybe you can help me with this, I don't feel like I remember a Yankees team for which I had comparably high expectations that disappointed this much. Maybe 2008?
Maybe. I mean, what I was thinking about is in every other year that they have not made the playoffs, there's always been like something else. And sure, they've been disappointing, but you always had like the backdrop of other things, like last year of Yankee Stadium or Mariano and Jeter's final year or the Tanaka. Judge and Gary are coming up, and that's kind of shifted the vibes. This is just the first time expectations have been higher than they were in probably other non-playoff years. Not that they can't make the playoffs, but there really hasn't been anything else except for how bad this team has played on the field, and I just feel like that has made this so much worse than other past years that I can remember. Or maybe it could just be, you know, this is this year and those were other years, but I don't know. I feel like that's it to me, that the story of this team is the underperformance and nothing else.
Yeah. Sometimes everything goes wrong, man. So look, even though I alluded to Yankees Twitter sometimes making this not fun, I think our audience consistently makes it fun. I love the interactions that we have on Twitter with people who listen to us, with people who follow us. I had a great conversation earlier with Hoodie Rob from Twitter about how the expanded playoffs may affect future trade deadlines and off seasons, which was something we mentioned in a prior episode. So really appreciate our listeners and followers, certainly. But look, man, it's been a rough season. It's been disappointing. We're frustrated. You're frustrated. Whipple and I, though, there's stuff in the works, man. We're texting back and forth this week a little bit about a new type of content we could be bringing in the off season, which we're really excited about. We think would be a really good time. And just take us away from... Although your mom did say she loves the banter, I think we'd preserve the banter, but so much of what we talk about on these week-to-week podcasts is just strategy, banter, you know, the current state of the baseball team. And getting to tap a little more into our enjoyment of baseball as fans, you know, we've done Remember Some Guys episodes and we've ranked games from different years and stuff like that. Getting to lean into stuff like that a little more in this off season, I think will be exciting. It's something that people should be excited for. And, you know, with that, Whipple, any parting shots from you?
I'm kind of at a loss for words, except just to echo what you said, that it's been a rough season, but it's great interacting with people. And I think the content will always be there for us to post, and we're working on more ways to do that. But the Yankees have not made it easy. And I think that my biggest parting shot is the last text I sent to you before we recorded. It has seemed to be this year, these Sunday heartbreakers, and this team has not really excelled at a lot, but they have excelled at setting up a really consistent narrative of winning one game, losing the next game, and then just losing the third game in devastating fashion. So the Yankees are at least good at that. And hard to be optimistic when you watch a game like that. But we'll be here next week, even if the Yankees are not going to be here.
All right. With that, people can keep up with us at YankeesFiles.com. They can follow us on Twitter, where we're at YankeesFiles. We're even on TikTok, where we're at YankeesFilesPodcast. Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you will rate, review, and subscribe if you like it, and just subscribe if you don't. We'll be back same time, same place next week to recap the series against the Braves and the Red Sox and update you on where the Yankees stand. Until then, thanks everyone for listening, and let's go Yankees.